when Krishna becomes a little older, when he not only crawls, but he also starts to walk. And then again, Krishna walks earlier than ordinary children usually walk. And one of the main features of Vedic culture and Krishna's pastimes are that everything is centered around the cow. And because everything is centered around the cow, therefore milk products are the staple. So yogurt, ghee, butter, makkhan, which is just butter mixed with sugar, and all kinds of milk products, kheer, sheer, these become like we drink tea for lunch. When they eat, they drink glasses of ghee. They have a glass of ghee. Krishna, he eats butter like, you know, you eat pizza. So therefore he's called Makkhan Chor. And particularly Krishna, when he's very young, he actually steals the butter. And that stealing butter, he's very well known. There's many pictures of Krishna, and he's always crawling up and stealing. When Krishna first started, then in Vrindavan, all the walls were not plaster; they're made of marble, so they're very mirror-like, so they're very reflective. And when Krishna was very young, and he first started to steal, and he saw his reflection in the wall, and he says, "If you don't tell my mother, then I'll share the butter with you." So another instance when Krishna climbed up onto the onto a stool to actually get, because they would hang the butter further up so Krishna wouldn't be able to get at it, and also so it would be safe from animals and other things. So Krishna climbed up and the stool tipped over and the butter fell down. So before Yashoda could come, Krishna was called out. He says that, "I caught this boy trying to steal the butter, and he disguised himself just like me, and now he's ran away." He was talking about his reflection. And so there are many, many pastimes. And then later on, Krishna began to not only do it himself, but then he got Balaram involved, and then he got his other friends involved, and they would just go house to house, and they would go to different homes, and they would enjoy stealing, which is very interesting because it's a propensity. The propensity to steal is also there originally in God. All these propensities are there, otherwise they wouldn't be there in us. We also have the propensity, especially children. They sort of take things. They naturally take something, and as soon as it's in their hands, then they think it's theirs. And then you try to take it away from them and convince them that it's not theirs. Immediately they start to cry. So that propensity is also there in Krishna. But of course it isn't so much that he needs to take that. But when Krishna was born, then all of the women in Vrindavan, when they developed the same type of love for Krishna as his mother, and they all wished that Krishna would be our child. So in order to fulfill their desire, then Krishna would go to their homes, and they also would make butter and all kinds of butter products, milk products, and Krishna would steal their milk products, because then that would also give them the satisfaction that Krishna had actually taken, accepted what they had made themselves. And sometimes the women, they would be very angry, and or at least they would pretend to be angry. So in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's described how sometimes the women would come and they would complain about Krishna. In one instance, Krishna went to, with the boys, he went to the home of this one gopi, and while they were stealing, and Krishna would also distribute it to the monkeys. All the monkeys would come and he would distribute butter to them. And monkeys in Vrindavan, even today, the monkeys are very much respected. And no one, although they cause a lot of trouble, no one will actually harm them. Because number one is that those devotees who are not really successful in spiritual life when they're living in Vrindavan, and they commit some kind of sinful activity, then many of them take birth as monkeys in the next life. And they become further purified by being in touch with the dust of Vrindavan. Generally, unsuccessful spiritual practitioners, at least those who are unsuccessful in Vrindavan, then they take birth in one of five bodies. Either they become pigs, or dogs, or monkeys, or turtles, and one more. And that becomes their last life. It's a very miserable life. Being a dog in Vrindavan is no fun. And neither is it being a monkey. But because Vrindavan is so powerful, spiritually powerful, then even if someone's not successful in spiritual life, they achieve one of these births, and then in those births, they're able to associate without offense, and the dust of Vrindavan delivers them, and then they go back to God. But those monkeys at Krishna's time, they were actually the monkeys who had come from Lord Ramachandra's pastime. And during the time of Lord Ramachandra, when he didn't have an army, he had to recruit an army of monkeys just to fight with Ravana. So after having fought with Ravana, the monkeys were very hungry. But they destroyed everything. All of Lanka was finished just from the big battle. And no matter how much they ate, they were dissatisfied. So Krishna told, Lord Ramachandra told them, listen, don't worry. When I appear in Vrindavan, then you can come there and I'll feed you all the butter and all the yogurt and so many other things as well. So those monkeys also appeared, and when Krishna came, then they came, and therefore when you see these pictures of Krishna feeding the monkeys, he's feeding those monkeys of Lord Ramachandra. Anyway, they were at the home of this one woman, and she heard all the big commotion going out, and she came out. And the boy started running away, but she managed to catch Krishna. And then she says, okay, now I caught you. And with butters all over his mouth, and up to now your mother doesn't believe that you would come and steal from our house. Now I'll take you personally. So she held in Krishna's hand, and she held Krishna's hand, and took Krishna all the way up to Mother Yashoda. And then she started to complain. Here's your son. He's in my house, broke the pot that was hanging from the ceiling, and eating it, distributing it to the monkeys, and along with all his friends, And Mataji sort of says, he was eating your butter. And she said, yes, he was eating my butter. He said, well, what will you do now? Won't you punish him? And he said, why should I punish him? He says, why are you complaining? So when the gopi, she looked, then she saw that actually she was holding her husband's hand. And her husband was there. Krishna had turned into her husband. So she thought, well, I've gone crazy. And Mother just sort of said, why are you complaining to me about your husband? Your husband eats your own butter. That's your business. That's something you should work out between him and you. Why are you complaining? And then you're falsely complaining about my son. And so the woman thought that, oh, maybe I've gone crazy, or I've gone mad. So she started to go back home. She's still holding, and then when they were out of sight, then Krishna turned back again into Krishna. And Krishna said, don't ever complain about me again. And then, so sometimes they see like that how's it possible that he's changing from one form to another? They realize that he's not an ordinary person. But even though, still, because they're so overwhelmed with attachment for Krishna, then they actually have that type of love. The concept that Krishna's God is not prominent in their mind. What's prominent in their mind is that Krishna is their child, or their friend, or their beloved. And then all of these activities, all of these pastimes, they take place in different places. And so parikrama means is that you go from one place to the next, and one hears those pastimes. And there are different parikrama books. Actually, the original, the first person, or the persons who did parikrama were Krishna's great grandson, Vajra, and he was taken around by Narada Muni and Narada Muni's friend and Shandilya Rishi, and they showed them where different pastime places were. And then since then it's been a tradition to go around Vrindavan and perform that type of parikrama and describe these pastimes. So there are books on parikrama, but generally the books are relatively short because they just say, this is where Krishna stole butter, this is where Krishna stole the clothes of the gopis, this is where Krishna lifted up Govardhan Hill. That's why, so all of these pastimes we're trying to describe in more detail. So then it becomes much larger. That's why it's in eight volumes as opposed to in one volume or a booklet. And in Hungary, in Krishna Valley, what we've also done in terms of, aside from being a self-sufficient community and promote sustainability, and values of both ecological and as well as socially sustainable values, is to actually replicate Vrindavan. So in the same way that the main pastime places of Vrindavan are there in India, so we've also established the main pastime places in Krishna Valley. They have about 600 pastime places, with the idea that persons can come, stay in a holy place, visit those pastime places, and remember Krishna's pastimes, chant Hare Krishna, and in that way be benefited or be purified. And this parikrama is just like a good Muslim goes to Mecca. Recommended once a year, but at least once in a life. So similarly, Vaishnavas are meant to, Srila Prabhupada also said the devotee should go every year to Vrindavan. But If she can't go to Vrindavan in India, then go to Vrindavan that's nearest to you, and one can therefore here go to Vrindavan in Hungary, and also perform that parikrama, or at least for those devotees in Hungary, it becomes an easy parikrama. You don't have to make a large investment of going to Vrindavan in India, which is very noisy, very polluted, very wonderful, but different atmosphere. So it's an opportunity, and this was Srila Prabhupada's desire, that people be able to actually experience this place of visiting, the benefit of visiting the holy place by going to a holy place near them, because everyone may not always be able to go to India, but they can go to that which is nearest to them. That's the principle of the book. And then we see same thing. Lord Chaitanya went on Vrindavan Parikrama, and all of our acharyas did that. Srila Prabhupada lived in Vrindavan. He also went, when devotees first went to India, he personally took devotees around and he told them the different places of Krishna's pastimes. So we call it parikrama, and it's one of the nine processes of devotional service. Shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam, pada sevanam. It's pada sevanam. So parikrama is called pada sevanam. Pada means feet, and sevana means service. So padana sevana means to do direct service to Krishna, or it also means that you serve Krishna with your feet. And in India, when they do this, it takes 40 days to do this parikrama, when they go one to the other and they camp out and they just keep walking every day barefoot. It's done barefoot also, out of respect for the Dham. Anyone have any questions about any of these? Is everything understandable to everyone? You spoke with an English accent. That's why. We didn't have to translate.
Who did they call Krishna before the name-giving ceremony?
Say that again?
Who did they call Krishna before the name-giving ceremony?
They didn't. Just son. Lala. Yes, there was was the family priest who gives the name, and he gives the name according to astrological reading, and these were ordinary people. They were cowherd men, so they don't do astrology. So they wanted to do that reading according to the proper astrological readings. And that's how they did.
I didn't quite get the significance of butter.
Butter?
Was it a material thing, or was it more symbolic?
The stealing of the butter, or butter itself?
Both.
In Vedic culture, the cow is at the center point, because cow gives two things. On one side, cow gives butter and milk, and milk products. From butter, we get ghee. So ghee becomes the essential thing by which is the cooking ingredient. Everything is cooked in ghee. What we use in the West, oil, everything. So in Indian culture and in ancient Indian culture, Vedic culture, everything is cooked in ghee. So it's the cooking medium. It's the basis, therefore it's basis for eating. And also because sacrifices, which were performed, fire sacrifices, was the basic religious activity of Brahmanas. The oblations into the fire was also done with ghee. the ghee is considered to be the purest substance. So in terms of livelihood and in terms of religious activity, ghee was the basis, and that's why the cow played such an important role. And when we say cow, then there's also the bull and the oxen, because they were then the source of all power. So they would till the earth, and they would do all the work, and they would travel by bullock carts from, even though Nanda Maharaj was extremely wealthy, and he had his own personal herd, was 900,000 cows. That was just his cows. So it's a big dairy, 900,000 cows. But still, when he went to Mathura in order to pay his taxes, he went by bullock cart. And they traveled by bullock cart. They could have traveled by horse, but they didn't. They were Goshas, or they were cowherdsmen, so they didn't have horses. They traveled with bulls and cows. So in that way, the cow and the bull becomes actually the centerpiece or the basis for society, because both in terms of physical maintenance as well as in terms of religious activity, everything is based around the cow and the bull. Now, for instance, we replace the bull with tractors, and we replace the cow with margarine and so many, and oil.
And the stealing of the butter?
Stealing of the butter. But do you want to translate? Can you do simultaneous translation? Or?
Yeah, we can maybe simultaneous, because they don't know English. So.
Okay, but do we do that? I stop, or you just? Or I just talk slowly.
I can do both.
I can do slow. I can talk slowly.
Yeah, I can translate.
Okay. Yes, stealing of butter is it's a pastime. It's something for, of enjoyment for one's own and for Krishna's own enjoyment.
And it be consumed just on its own.
Just on its own.
This is deemed pleasurable.
Well, down the street people eat raw fish. So if you can eat raw fish, you can eat raw butter. It's a matter of taste. What to speak of so many other things that they eat.
Yeah. And it is deemed nutritious or not?
Yeah.
And nutritious.
And of course we should qualify that it was a different time. It was 5,000 years ago. It was 5,000 years ago that it took place, and people's physiology was different than ours. So I think that their ability to digest and consume milk products was more higher than ours at present. When you read the scriptures and the quantities and the constant consuming like that butter and milk products and so many other things, then it's not something that one could do at the present time. But then they were different also. Size-wise, they were bigger than we are. They were about three times our size. So that's why they lived more. In that age, people were larger.
You take that literally rather than symbolically?
Yeah. Yeah, generally, the sort of average height was about 15 feet, 5 meters to 6, 7 meters. Even Bible says that, and they lived longer lives.
Yeah.
And then prior to that, they were even bigger. Because there are generally the universe, and especially our Earth, goes through four cycles. And in each cycle, the duration of life decreases. In the first cycle, the duration of life is 100,000 years. People are very tall, very big, and very religious, naturally religious. And then by the force of time, that decreases. Next stage, there are 10,000. Next stage, 1,000 years. And this stage, maximum 100 years. And that's if you're lucky. There was one pastime in where the story of a Muchukunda who was who was actually a great king. And he had helped the demigods fight with the demons. And he was from Treta Yuga. He was from the second age. He was from the second age. And he was engaged so much in fighting that he became very, very tired. So he slept. And he slept for such a long time. He slept from the second age into the third age when Krishna was present. In fact, he slept right through it, right through that entire age. And when Krishna woke him up, then he saw that they were smaller. He saw that they were already, Krishna was already smaller. They were again like a third. He was even bigger than them. If Krishna was 5 meters, then they were like 15 meters. But they were of a whole different size. So he saw that everything had already gotten even smaller. That's the essence of Vedic culture, is placing in terms of economic foundation. The economic foundation of Vedic culture was based upon bull power and the cow, and then protecting those animals by all means. So it was a very much a vegetarian culture, although not necessarily everyone was vegetarian, but those kind of animals they wouldn't eat. That's why they're called sacred. So people know about how in India cows are sacred, although unfortunately India has the largest leather industry in the world. But originally, the cows are considered sacred because cows are considered to be one of our mothers and gives us milk, like our mother does. And if those points of sustenance are considered, such as ghee, milk, and all of those food products, and a source of energy for whatever we need, whether it be agriculture or other things or the bull, then it's something sacred in the sense that it requires to be protected. Not sacred necessarily in the sense that it's divine. sacred in the sense that it's very, very important. Something sacred, if your whole culture depends on it, then you hold that very, you take care of that very carefully. So in India, at least even recently, but particularly 5,000 years ago, it was considered very, very sacred. The killing of cows or bulls was equivalent to killing of human beings. Not that the cow and bull is equivalent to a human being, but in terms of importance, because they're so closely interlinked, therefore it is considered to be a very, very serious offense. Something else? But Krishna's pastimes, just like in Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna's pastimes are described in the 10th canto, which is already half the book is gone. And that's because it becomes, unless one understands the first nine, then won't be able to take the 10th canto in the right frame of mind. Because the impression will be that he's ordinary human being, because he's acting like an ordinary human being. That's exactly his pastime or his sport. But the first nine cantos are meant to actually establish that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then once one is convinced of that, then one can relate to how he also enjoys not being worshipped as God, but being loved for who he is as a person instead of what he is. Should we also do a little kirtan?
Yeah.
And we should do a little kirtan and we could talk a little more. He wants to play kirtan? Okay. Okay, let's